So welcome to the Exploring Humanity podcast. I'm really excited today. I have Jonathan on the podcast, Robinson here, and I just want to present the book here that we will also put down in the description after the podcast, which is really interesting perspective on MDMA as medicine. I know it says ecstasy as medicine. I just know it's more controversial word, at least over here, ecstasy, than using the term MDMA, which is why I'm doing that. But you can use whatever term you're most comfortable with, Jonathan. But I'm super happy to have you here. So thank you for making the time to join us.
Thank you, Thomas. It's going to be a lot of fun.
I think so, too. I'm really curious about, just so people can get to know you a bit, and again, of course, they can read about your credentials and all the work you've done. You obviously facilitated a lot of journeys in a therapeutic setting. But I think I also just want people to get to know you a bit on a personal level. So it would be great to know a bit about, you know, what was your motivation for getting into this field? Because I know for myself, a lot of us had some kind of personal story that obviously drives us towards this field.
Yeah, well, I was blessed to have a very unhappy childhood. I say that because by the time I was 12, I realized if I was going to get over being depressed and beaten back by my stepfather, I would need to go inside. So I started meditating and taking drugs at age 12. By the time I was 14, I had discovered LSD and MDMA. And I realized that MDMA could help me overcome some of my trauma. So I took a very therapeutic approach even at that young age, but eventually that led to studying it in graduate school. I did the first study on MDMA and PTSD back in 1984 when it was still legal. And then 2 weeks later, the U.S. government made it illegal. But since then, I've led maybe 800 journeys, underground therapist, and now I teach the largest MDMA training course in the world.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that, Jonathan. And I'm grateful that you are out here spreading this work. Because obviously, sadly, there have been all these decriminalization of these compounds, which obviously really have inhibited both their potential, you know, constructive use and also a lot of research, which I know, of course, in recent time now, we're starting to get that back very, very slowly. And yet we lost, you know, a good long period of time when nothing really was progressing, which is sad. So I'm happy that some people continued, because also I think, as you said, you continue this underground, it means that there are still experience that has been built, right? And I think often in the modern day research, and it's amazing what they're doing, but also they're starting very new, fresh, right? But it's great with people like you who then have that experience that they can bring into this picture, which I really think we shouldn't forget. We often hear about these exciting scientific findings, and I just want to also bring in the voice of experience of people that have actually really sat with these compounds and with clients. So that's super exciting to get your perspective today. I'm curious what it was that drew you specifically to MDMA, because there's so many different compounds, right? And I know for me, I started out with psilocybin primarily, mimetic mushrooms, as most people call it. And that had a really profound impact on me, which is what kind of drew me into this field, because it really very much changed and rewired, I think, my attachment systems and how I related to other people. So I'm curious, what made you gravitate towards MDMA?
Well, you know, I'm a psychotherapist, so I found that I could do maybe 2 or 3 years of psychotherapy in one afternoon with MDMA. And it really helps to unwind a lot of the things that keep us from joy, peace, and anxiety, peace and just happiness. So I found it to be a more therapeutic use than the other psychedelics, although I tried those as well. But MDMA is kind of like a Swiss Army knife. It can do a lot of things well. And in therapy, you can really just accelerate the process 100 times. And I like that idea. I'm always looking for the best methods. And I don't know if you know this, Thomas, but I've interviewed 100 spiritual and psychological leaders, everybody from Wayne Dyer, Mother Teresa and the Dalai Lama to Deepak Chopra. I'm always asking, what's the most effective method you're aware of for changing people? And I kind of collect those methods, but in my opinion, MDMA therapy is probably the quickest way that people can transform.
And yeah, thank you for that. And, you know, I think that's what part of what I really find interesting about the book was this very practical way of, like you said, looking for the best solutions and way of, while a lot of the research, obviously, and I think you even mentioned this in the book, have to follow specific frameworks, right, of how they started the research and now they kind of have to continue that, which very often in this non-intervention model, right, where you are just a sitter observer, which doesn't necessarily have, like you said, that therapeutic involvement in the same way. So this is what's really curious about how you're using MDMA in that context where you can actually engage, right, with the person you're doing this with. So I'm just really curious to hear a bit more about that, how that actually works for you when you then do that. Because I think in a book, it also talked about how, well, I guess you were forced to start doing some of this work online and how that even, I'm curious how that also changed engaging with this in a therapeutic process compared to being face-to-face.
Yeah, sure. Well, you know, there's this organization called MAPS, which stands for Multidisciplinary Association of Psychedelic Studies, and they funded the original research. They had to raise, you know, $50 million to do that. And what they did was they wanted to get FDA approval for this medicine. And the FDA stands for Food and Drug Administration. It doesn't stand for the Food and Therapy Administration. So they came up with a protocol that was, let's give people the pill and not do any therapy and see if that helps them overcome PTSD. And in fact, it does. It works really well. That's why the FDA is likely to give it approval for the first time in its history of changing an illegal drug to a legally prescribed medicine. That's likely to happen in August of this year. Mm-hmm. Well, just because they didn't do therapy and they wanted to get FDA approval doesn't mean that that's the best way to use MDMA. In fact, in the 1970s, a lot of therapists were using it in the way I use it, which is give people the medicine and then do therapy on that. And it's amazing what you can do in a 4 or 5 hour period. It's like brain surgery. You can really change people's lives. So I've been doing that. And then when COVID hit, I had the crazy idea, well, you know, I can't do this in person anymore. Let's try it on Zoom. And to my and everybody else's surprise, it works better on Zoom than in person. And I'm not sure why, although, you know, on Zoom, there is a level of safety that is increased from being in person. You know, if a woman's been raped and she's trying to get over her trauma, coming to my office, taking a drug and lying on my couch is not the safest way to do therapy. Mm-hmm. But on Zoom, you feel very much in control. The medicine helps you feel very safe. And it's very convenient. I can charge less. And it's very easy for people on MDMA to be very focused for 5 hours on Zoom. So it really works out better for everyone.
That's amazing, because I think that really surprised me when I read that in your book where you talked about this of doing it online. And I was a bit like you, I guess, a bit surprised, right? Where I would, mm-hmm. I guess my presumption would have been that there was more connection and safety in person. But you're right. I can also see, especially in the example you give, maybe a woman with a man that they don't know that well, that actually there's much more safety doing it over Zoom. And I'm still super curious how that looked like. So I might have to do a session with you one day just to understand, you know, that process of how you do it. Also, you mentioned something interesting, Jonathan, because, you know, there has been very much this model about, oh, we just give people a chemical to change their brain, you know, a bit like with antidepressants, right? So we just give mm-hmm. them a pill. And then that, and like you said, even though, yes, just giving a psychedelics have proven amazing results, doesn't mean that not having intervention is the best way, right? So I think it's great how you kind of push that. And I guess also one of the things, at least for me, and I really want to hear your opinion, that's quite amazing about MDMA is the fact that it allowed people to still be present enough to process. While I found with some of the other things you might, whether it's DMT, ayahuasca, whatever it be, people might start having really strong hallucinations and other things where they can't actually still be present enough to process. And I would love to hear your opinion on this as well.
Yeah. Well, you know, I definitely don't do Zoom sessions on any of the other psychedelics, and they're really very different. You know, MDMA leads to a feeling of clear-headedness and openness. In fact, my dad and stepmother asked me why I was so enthusiastic about this. And I said, well, you know, you should try it. And to my surprise, they were willing to try it. And a year later, I asked them if they'd ever taken the medicine. And they said, yeah, we took it. So I asked them what happened. And they said, well, really, nothing happened, which surprised me. So I said, well, what'd you end up doing that evening? And they said, well, once the medicine didn't seem to work, we decided to sit on the couch and we ended up talking about how much we love each other and how wonderful our lives were and just how blessed we were. And then we cuddled for a few hours. It ended up being the best night of our entire marriage. The only disappointment was the drug never took effect. So I'm laughing because, you know, people don't realize it doesn't so much feel like a drug at a normal dose. It feels like you are the most open, most loving, most curious self you've ever been. But it feels like you've just taken away all the obstacles. So that's why it's safe to do on Zoom. There's no, you know, feeling of like, you know, where's the computer screen or something like that. So, yeah, you know, it's really nice to be able to have those very deep, intimate conversations with somebody who can help you. And it's very rewarding to do.
Yeah, and I think that's so amazing, this part, that it allowed people to actually still engage, right? They don't necessarily go off as much into their internal or their own world as maybe with other psychedelics that might happen. And, you know, I had somebody ask me they were in a relationship and say, oh, if we just take MDMA, will this solve my relationship? And I said, I don't think it solves anything. I think it will help you have more honest conversation, right? Because there's this idea that MDMA is the love drug or whatever it's been termed. And this idea that if we just take that, then our relationship will suddenly have all this love again. And of course that can happen if there was already a foundation for that and people have got lost. Mm-hmm. But I think more, I call it a way to facilitate really honest conversations with self and others. And I love to hear again, your how you see this, than something that necessarily would bring a relationship back to being in love, but at least they can get more these things that maybe we have kept or we've been unable to hear because of our defense strategies, right? It seems to give that openness to now be able to both express and hear. But I don't know, have you worked with couples or only primarily with individuals, Jonathan?
No, I've worked with about 200 couples. In fact, later this year, I'll be doing a 22-week training on MDMA and couples. And it'll be the only course like that in the world, actually. So I'm very excited about that. It's an amazing drug. You know, I do a lot of couples therapy. I had a book called Communication Miracles for Couples that Oprah really liked and ended up selling a million copies. So I ended up doing a lot of couples therapy. And couples therapy generally is like a long, slow slog. It's challenging for everyone. And, you know, it can take a couple of years to really make a lot of progress. Well, on MDMA, that long, slow slog turns into a very quick, enjoyable, ride in which you literally can solve a lot of the issues in a couple with that guidance. Now, taking it on your own is a different thing. You'll certainly have more honest conversation and more connection, but you won't necessarily have the guidance to solve the ingrained issues between a couple. So it's very popular. I do help a lot of couples, and it's you know, a lot of people know MDMA as a dance party drug, and as I said, it can do a lot of things well. You know, a laptop can act as a doorstop, but there's better uses for a laptop than a doorstop, and there's better uses for MDMA as a dance party drug. And when people take it, they are often surprised at how effective it is in facilitating therapeutic breakthroughs.
That is so fascinating. And also, I guess, also I've read about some research, I think, that's being undertaken now about MDMA in couples therapy. So I work in emotional focused couple therapy, actually, obviously based on attachment theory, Sue Johnson. And I'm very fascinated, obviously, with this. And I'll be interested about the training that you said that you'll be obviously putting out in regards to this, because even though, you know, emotion-focused couple therapy can be really, really useful, as you said, they can also be really long processes, especially when there's a lot of attachment wounds that make it really difficult to make progress, right? And for people to hear each other, simply because that fundamental trust has been broken so much that the message just can't get through. So it's super fascinating how we would be able to support people also in that setting. I'm curious, I don't know if there's anything you can share from that, because I know, of course, part of your work is confidential, but is there any kind of overall themes or ideas you can give to how that looks like when a couple come and work with MDMA?
Also, something that is useful to know is the Imperial College of London is now doing a study that I'm participating in for couples and MDMA to show its effectiveness. But when I work with couples, the first thing I like to do is really connect them emotionally, which is quite easy on MDMA. You know, trying to work out couples' issues with a partner that you don't trust and you're mad at is damn near impossible. But working out issues with somebody that you trust and love is actually quite easy. So I make sure that they have that emotional connection first. And then we go into helping each other understand each other. You know, I never have couples come into my office and say, we really understand each other quite well. That's why we want a divorce. But, you know, I do have the opposite where, you know, I just don't understand him or her. That's why we're thinking of a divorce. So I really help couples understand each other. And you're probably familiar with the book, Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, which is, you know, showing that we're really very different, like two different species. And when people really get that, it really helps them to be more empathetic, to be more understanding, and also better at working out problems. So I have people like play with the curiosity game, like, so tell me, why did you have an affair? You know, and MDMA, that conversation is possible without all your defenses coming up, whereas normally it would create total havoc. So I have people understand each other. And then we have a part where we work through problems and we come up with agreements as to how to handle things like money or sex or kids. And usually those agreements are very easily worked out and they work out even after the MDMA is over in an integration session.
And that's the amazing thing, isn't it? That, as you said, the benefits we actually, you can see even after the effect wears off, right? Which is so incredible that there's actually fundamental changes taking place. And I think one thing that I found so fascinating about MDMA was, which obviously makes all this possible you're describing, is how it calms down the amygdala, the fear response, right? That then allow, whether it's, you know, working with complex PTSD, it allow people to talk about traumas that maybe before were just not possible to engage with at all. Or like you said, here with couples, it suddenly make it possible for them to hear each other because those normal fear responses are really dampened. But what is just still so fascinating for me, even today, even having read all the science, is that it actually lasts also very often afterwards, right? Which is really incredible. And of course, we'll put the links to all your other stuff as well in the description afterwards, your trainings. I think you're doing one with the Psychedelic Society or something.
I actually split off from the Psychedelic Society so that I could do more what I thought was best for my clientele. But they're still doing good work and they supported the first couple of trials. This is the third time I've done it.
Thank you for clarifying that. And we can still put the link below, right? So people can find it. So so at least they can come to your website, et cetera, and get to know more if they want the training. I'm curious about this because I think this is what I often hear from people that are interested in doing things around MDMA is the potential challenge or risk about the purity, right? Because it's not legalized, we can't just go buy it at a pharmacy, right? So often people then have to find it by some guy through a guy on the street and they don't really know the purity and therefore not the safety, right? So I wonder how you have engaged with this issue that of course has to come up at some point when people talk about MDMA therapy, as long as it's not legalized, right? And we can't buy it anywhere.
Well, a couple ways. One is I go into the tests that are easily available, some free, some cost money, to test the purity of MDMA that you might get. But also there's an app called Signal in which is encrypted, and a lot of people can find MDMA on that app just by doing searches. And in my trainings, there's a Telegram group in which people share information. I'm not involved in that, but through the apps and through testing, we take care and make sure that people do have access to good MDMA. But as I said, because it is illegal, I'm not involved in any of that. But people do find ways of doing that.
Of course. And I think, so I'm familiar with a company here in the EU, a German startup company who does these test kits. And again, I can put the link in the description. Do you know of a company in the US? Because I know for you, it's probably common sense, but a lot of new people to this probably don't know where to get it. Are there places online where they can order it, et cetera, in the US?
Yeah, there's a couple of places. One is dancesafe.org. They have a lot of good test kits for fentanyl and MDMA. Another place is rollkit, rollkit.com, I believe it is. They have testing things as well.
Amazing. Thank you. And we can put the links below. It's just a good starting point, right, for people, because I think even when we talk about this, there's so many amazing benefits. I also want the conversation to like focus on what is the safety around this, right, that people get something that's actually pure. So thank you for that, Jonathan. And I'm really curious about also, because as you said, there's obviously different ways of doing that. And you've been really looking a lot on what are the best ways of engaging with this compound. And of course, in the research, is often this non-intervention model that you mentioned briefly. I'm really curious for you, what have you found through all these conversations, I guess, explorations, to be the most effective way? I'm more talking about individual now than couples. If you work with someone, is there like a framework that you found work better?
Well, in my training, I go into a lot of depth about 12 different interventions that I found to be very useful. And some of those are described in the book, Ecstasy as Medicine. What the MAPS approach did was you put a blindfold on some, you do therapy, talk therapy before, but the day of the journey, you just put a blindfold on somebody and have them listen to music. And there's not direct therapy interventions during the journey. My approach is you are having basically a five-hour therapy session with someone. In a previous call, I find out what their issues are and what success would look like. And then we focus on that. But, you know, it seems that sometimes the medicine knows better what to bring up than I do. There's been times where, just to give a personal example, about 10 years ago, my wife and I were having trouble in our marriage. She was very upset at me for very little things, like leaving the light on. And this was very different than how she usually is. But, you know, over a 3-month period, she was just mad at me all the time. Well, I called a friend, an underground therapist, and we did some MDMA together, you know, my wife and I. And what came out was that 3 months earlier, her aunt had died, and she had not taken time to visit her aunt during that time. And she was really upset at herself for not taking the time to do that. And she had to forgive herself. She cried while I held her. Well, long story short, after that trip, all her anger was gone. So neither I nor my wife knew what was really going on, but somehow the medicine brought up the real issue and it could be cleared out. And I see that happen not infrequently. So it's I hold my agenda lightly as we journey and I talk to people, but I often just see what is the medicine bringing up so we could talk about that.
So it sounds almost like an intention, but with a lot of flexibility, if I'm getting that right, that you set an intention in the session before, like you speak to them, but there's also flexibility that we might not have conscious awareness initially, right, on what it is that we actually need to engage with. And that's so beautiful, that story. Thank you for sharing that personal story with you and your wife. I think it's in the book as well, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
And just shows how, you know, again, a lot of these things operate below conscious awareness, right? And how we suddenly are able to access that when, again, we lower this fear threshold. and we are able to see at things that maybe were too shameful for us to look at, or too terrifying, etc. And how that profound doing that within a framework where it feels safe when you're under MDMA can really restructure how we relate to those experiences. It's just, it never stopped to fascinate me. So thank you for that story. And I'm curious, Jonathan, because as I guess more and more people, probably you are doing training now, it might become legalized, more and more therapists are obviously going to engage with this field that you're one of the innovators in, and then of course spreading the correct training here. But what are some precautions that you feel that therapists or even people who want to take this maybe should take? Because again, I don't want to sound as a miracle where everybody in any state should just, you know, take an MDMA pill. What would be some wise things to like consider, both from a therapeutic perspective as a therapist, but also as a potential client who want to engage?
Yeah, great question. You know, in the Ecstasy as Medicine book, chapter 2 is all about dangers and contraindications, and getting pure medicine is certainly one of them. You know, a lot of MDMA is cut with things like bath salts and other things. So you really want to test any medicine that you might acquire. That's one thing. Also, a lot of people have some kind of after effects, meaning they're really tired for a day or two. In my book, I talk about up to eight supplements you can take that tend to mitigate those things. You also want to find somebody who is practiced, who knows what they're doing, if they're a guide, because you are in a vulnerable state. One of the things I like about the Zoom sessions is that one of the most dangerous things has been inappropriate relationships with people taking MDMA. So some therapists have been arrested or other things because they start a romantic relationship with a client, or they cuddled with a client, which is inappropriate. So making sure that you have good boundaries and you trust any guide that you're working with. Those are some things. I would say maybe 2% of people, just their body doesn't react well to it. One contraindication that comes up a lot is if you're taking antidepressants, it neutralizes the MDMA. They work on the same neurotransmitter pathways. So you really can't be taking MAO inhibitors or antidepressants with MDMA. It can be dangerous or just not effective. So there's a list in the book about things that you want to be aware of. But luckily, bad trips are very, very rare. I'd say maybe 20% of people taking psilocybin or LSD do have a bad trip. But in MDMA, I'd say that's less than 1%.
And I guess, thank you for clarifying that. And I guess that's also one of the benefits, right? When we talked about earlier about the difference between different psychedelic compounds and MDMA, as you said, that it's very, very rare that people have a really challenging experience that's really difficult to integrate. And while the other compounds also have their place for sure, then you're right. There's a slightly bigger risk, I think, of psychological distress, right, than with MDMA. And yet you mentioned some really good things to be aware of, that maybe, like you said, the impacts that people might have a couple of days after, just so it doesn't come as a surprise to people, right? And they suddenly get worried, is something wrong with me, etc. So I think it's really good to mention. Is there anything that people can do to prepare themselves for going in on this journey, like before they even start or they do it, so they have a higher chance of, I guess, a more beneficial integration afterwards?
Well, it depends whether they're trying to do it on their own or trying to do it with a guide. If they're trying to do it on their own, I do have a chapter dedicated to that in the Ecstasy as Medicine book, but it can be hard to get the full value when you do it on your own, because the experience is often so pleasurable that without guidance, you just don't want to go into your psychological work. Let's just, you know, float in the blissful state. But with a guide, I think it's good to have one or more sessions before defining your intention and what you want to get out of it and what issues you might want to bring up. And then afterwards, I do at least one or more integration sessions. I think it's really important that you have some focus on integration, because you want to take the insights and turn them into real behavior changes. You know, information is not transformation. You have to have some kind of tool. And I work with certain motivational methods that help people turn their insights into actual changes in their life.
Amazing. And, you know, one thing that, so I primarily work with people that were consuming psilocybin, but one thing that I really enjoyed doing and found really beneficial was to work with them in advance on the social support system that they had afterwards. Because again, I guess we often, at least in Western culture, treat people in this individualistic way, right? And for me, we always have to see this in a social construct that we're within. So I found that really beneficial too, because some people come and don't actually have that, right? And especially if they maybe have really severe traumas, they just don't have a social. So I helped them build it beforehand. And I found that been really helpful, because then afterwards they don't feel alone and they're not, you know, dependent just on me, but they just have that, you know, support structure around them, which is super beneficial. But thank you for mentioning as well, Jonathan, these tips what people can do. And then I wondered, because as obviously you mentioned some of the research happening, one of them here in London, close to home for me, on couples therapy. I'm wondering if there's any other research that's happening around MDMA which you find exciting, or any kind of progress at the moment that might be interesting to the listeners to follow on.
Yeah, well, a lot of people know about the research with MDMA and PTSD, but there's other studies being done, MDMA for treating anxiety disorders, MDMA for treating addictions, especially alcoholism. They found amazing results that way, which really surprised everyone. So the unfortunate thing is that these studies do take millions of dollars and many, many years to do. And then the original studies done with MDMA and PTSD had the problem of being too effective. So the FDA didn't actually believe them, so they had to do it again. You know, so sometimes these things can take a long time. But luckily, anecdotally, you know, I can see in the 800 journeys I've done that MDMA really just accelerates every therapeutic process if the therapist knows what they're doing. And it's because it creates such a feeling of safety and openness and non-defensiveness and takes down the fear level that just makes anything you're trying to achieve much more effective.
And, you know, isn't that just the irony of life that, as you said, one of the exciting studies that, and I read about that as well, that shows that, you know, MDMA therapy could be really helpful for people that have addictions. And part of this becoming illegal, when they made it illegal, is obviously part of the opposite, right? That the belief was that this would make people highly addictive and be very, very dangerous. So I guess the irony is slowly coming back now as we are getting more research. So it's really exciting times, I feel, to be alive around this, you know, this area. And actually, I think this brings us perfectly on to the next question I have, because I wonder if you could talk to some of the misconceptions that has been around MDMA, and especially I know the word ecstasy sometimes make people go, ooh, right? And I think it's important maybe to address them, because even despite all this research, let's be honest, most people are not like you and me, don't sit and read about the research into psychedelics, right? So it would be great if you could kind of dispel some of these myths. I wonder if that's something you could speak to.
Sure. Well, because there was a government-funded labs to try to discredit MDMA, there came out some research showing that it creates holes in the brain or could create brain damage. It ends up that study, the person doing it didn't give MDMA to monkeys. They gave massive doses of methamphetamine. So it came out that, you know, MDMA can cause brain damage or kill you or create holes in the brain. And only later did it come out that the guy had not actually used MDMA. He had used these massive doses of methamphetamine. Well, that took, you know, 10 years to clarify. And finally, the guy was shown to be a fraud. And but the original thing is that these big news stories came out 10 years later, when they saw that it was a ball study with a different compound, the news did not cover that. So that's the type of thing that took 30, 40 years for MDMA to finally become a FDA-approved drug, hopefully later this year. So it ends up that MDMA does use a lot of serotonin in the brain, and that the good news is that the brain recovers in about 2 weeks from that. There's no lasting damage from that. People do often feel tired the next day, but a lot of those effects can be mitigated with the right supplements and by taking pure MDMA. A lot of the negative effects associated with MDMA come from the fact that people are not taking the pure MDMA, but they're taking stuff mixed with methamphetamine and other things. But when people take the pure stuff, generally people feel fine the next day. Let's see, what other common misconception? Oh, the idea of it putting holes in the brain. Well, that meant that it was just reducing the blood flow to the amygdala. And somebody said, oh, that's like putting a hole in the brain. Actually, no, that's a very healthy thing. But, you know, everybody has their spin. And it's unfortunate that some of that spin was to try to get people afraid of MDMA. And then they ended up with really dangerous drugs like methamphetamine or fentanyl and things like that.
Yes. And, you know, I also think it's interesting how there was a lot of this fear mongering to try and make people scared, right, of these compounds. And yet, I guess, you know, I know quite a few nurses. I also know a couple of people, my friends who are police officers. And, you know, if I ask them, do you have a lot of people showing up in hospital, you know, who's taken MDMA and suddenly are about to die? Then the answer is no. My friend who's a police officer, do you have a lot of people suddenly going out doing horrible crimes because they're on MDMA? No. Not at all, right. Unheard of, right? And yet we have been induced that it would make people behave in ways and endanger them, etc. And I think, like you mentioned earlier and also talk about in the book, it's really about the set and setting. If you do this in safe environments with a safe person, a trained person, it is extremely safe, right?
Yeah.
And of course, yes, it can be dangerous if you buy some random stuff on the street. You have no idea what you take. But that's with anything, right? If you eat anything random, you have no idea what you're eating. That could be a danger.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Approximately 6 people a year die of MDMA overdoses in America, but 500 people a year die of overdoses of Tylenol. And about 120,000 people die each year of fentanyl. So that's a 20,000-to-1 difference. So it's, you know, it's about as dangerous as aspirin.
Yes, and we haven't even mentioned alcohol or tobacco yet. So
right.
that would even push it further off statistically, I think.
Exactly,
so yes,
exactly.
it puts it in a really nice perspective. So I appreciate how you make that comparison, actually, because it really, and you know, we even forget some people die from drinking too much water. Like there's lots of things that can kill us. But overall, you know, MDMA taken in the right circumstance and with the right support, and with the right purity, is very, very safe. So I think it's important and nice that we can bring awareness to that. I'm curious and also just excited to hear a bit about what you think the future is for this field, especially MDMA. That's obviously where you're really focusing your attention. Where do you see the future go? Because, of course, we are maybe slowly moving towards legalization. But what do you think is going to happen in the next, I don't know, 2, 3, 4, 5 years from now?
Well, Australia's already made it legal, but governments work really slow. So assuming that the FDA makes it a medically prescribed drug this summer, it's going to take a while before doctors can really prescribe it. Maybe 2 or 3 years before people can get it that way. But even when they get it that way, because of the way that the FDA is approving it, clinics that open are going to be very expensive. So I feel like the underground movement is going to explode because people will be reading that it's a great form of therapy, but they won't want to pay $14,000 to do the therapy. Most of the people I train charge between $1,000 and $2,000, and some as little as $500. So that makes it available to literally millions of people. And I think that's going to be like a big new field. That's why my trainings are doing well, is that, you know, therapists realize this is where the hockey puck is going. Wayne Gretzky said, why are you the best hockey player? He said, I don't skate to where the puck is. I skate to where it's going. And I think that there's going to be a big explosion in terms of popularity of people. Instead of going to a therapist for 2 or 3 years once a week, they'll go to a therapist for one session, and then they'll do a journey, and then they'll do an integration session, and they'll get the results that they want. I also think that there'll be some mixing of medicines, like mixing MDMA with psilocybin. That's shown to be quite effective as well.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that would be the next, I guess, interesting area. For me too, I'm very curious about this, to see how potentially these compounds can be used in conjunction with each other to maybe even enhance, right, the effects. So it's not so much should I do MDMA or psilocybin, but also recognizing that at, you know, different place, different person can be a benefit of using different compounds, right? So I think, yeah, it's a really exciting field. And I'm curious, Jonathan, here at the end, to just know what you think are like the key points that people maybe can take away from the book. And I really recommend people buying here Ecstasy as Medicine, which is Jonathan's book, and you can get it on Amazon. But I'm curious, what are like kind of the key points you think that might be really interesting for people in the book?
Well, I think they definitely benefit from knowing if they're a good candidate, like what the contraindications are. So they don't, you know, if they're on antidepressants and they take MDMA, they notice that nothing happened. Well, because they neutralize each other. So there's safety things to definitely be aware of. You know, knowing supplements you can take that make it so that there's no, very little negative side effects for most people. But also, you know, getting clear on set and setting and intention and how to use this medicine, not as a dance party drug, but as a gift to humanity for accelerating transformation during these really challenging times. You know, things are crazy. People are having a hard time. And it's lucky that at that exact time that this medicine's becoming more available and people are learning how to use it in a way that's really transformative.
Amazing. Thank you, Jonathan. And again, if you're interested in knowing more about MDMA or ecstasy, it's the same thing as a medicine. The book is called Ecstasy as Medicine by Jonathan Robinson. So go get that on Amazon. Also, Jonathan, before we obviously finish up, could you just tell people a bit about where they can find you? Because they might, whether they are interested in doing, you know, MDMA therapy with you or maybe looking at your trainings, where would they go to find you?
Well, best place is I have a website, xtcasmedicine.com. And they can contact me that way. And they also, if they put in their email address, they get 10 ways to avoid bad psychedelic trips and the 12 questions that lead to instant intimacy with anyone. So, you know, I really want to make these great methods available to a lot of people, and all that's free.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Jonathan, for coming on and just sharing your expertise and your knowledge and making that available to people.
Well, great questions, Thomas. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you. So